It's the holiday season, which means it's time to check in with the Audubon's annual Christmas bird count, something we do every year on Science Friday. And every year, tens of thousands of bird enthusiasts around the world gather in fields, parks, and even their own backyards, braving the winter elements to help put together a census of the bird population. It's become a fun holiday tradition, but the Christmas bird count is also an important part of the National Audubon Society's conservation efforts. So which of our feathered friends can we expect to see this winter? Remember last year there was a heavy invasion of snowy owls last year? Are we going to see that again? Or is there another species that may make a special appearance? This is our latest Ask an Expert series, so you can tweet us at SciFry, S-C-I-F-R-I, with your birding questions. We'll take all kinds of birding questions on Ask an Expert. And if you're taking part in the count, maybe you are out there with your raincoat on this time of the year, or snow if you're out in the middle Midwest. We want to know what you've seen. Our number is 1-800-989-8255, 1-800-989-TALK. Let me introduce my guests. Gary Langham is chief scientist at the National Audubon Society in Washington. He joins us from Washington. Welcome.
Hi, Ira. Great to be here again.
Good to have you again. David Bonter is an ornithologist at Cornell Laboratory of Ornithology at Cornell University in Ithaca. He joins us from WXXI in Rochester. Welcome back, Dr. Bonter.
Thanks for having me back again.
Before we get started with questions, I want to have a little quiz. We're going to play a little clip and see if our listeners can guess the bird. Give us a call, 1-800-989-8255, if you think you know what kind of bird this is. Ooh. Do you guys know what it is? Don't give it away. Do you know what it is? I'm sure you know.
Yes.
Yeah.
There's something in the background, too, that I think I picked up.
Gary, how long does the bird count run, and who typically takes part in it?
So we're having another great year, breaking records in participation. It runs from the 14th of December until the 5th of January. And all sorts of people take part in this across the Western Hemisphere. Mm-hmm. In fact, this year participation is way up. We're not even halfway done, and we have more than 100 new circles and at least 2,500 new people this year, so that's terrific.
Right, and if you're one of those new people who are out there and you want to call in on your cell, you're listening, 1-800-989-8255 is our number. Tell us what you're seeing out there, and if you're just a backyard, you know, follow it in your backyard at your bird feeder like I do, and you want to know, get some tips, call your friends, tell them to tune in, because we'll be giving out tips also. Our number, 1-800-989-8255. You can tweet us at SciFry, S-C-I-F-R-I. We'll be back with Gary Langham and David Bonter after this break. Stay with us. This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. We're talking this hour about the Audubon's Christmas bird count with our two bird experts, Gary Langham, who is chief scientist at the National Audubon Society. David Bonter is an ornithologist at Cornell University. Before the break, we played a clip to see if anybody could guess the bird. We'll play it one more time and take our first guest call. Let's hear that. All right. Very refreshing sound. Let's go to the phones and go to Mark in Deerport, Michigan. Hi, Mark. Have you got a guess?
Hello, how are you?
Hi there.
That was a cardinal.
A cardinal?
Yeah.
I wish I had a bell to ring.
Yeah. What kind was a northern cardinal. Did anybody hear what was singing in the background, too?
You'll have to
tricky one.
What is in the thank you, Mark. We don't have a prize. You'll just be the winner. Thanks a lot. What was in the background?
I'm pretty sure I heard a blue-gray gnatcatcher there in the background just hissing away a little bit.
That would have been my second guess.
But you won't be hearing either of those birds singing right now. It'll be a few more weeks as the days get longer before the birds start singing again.
Are we seeing anything unusual? Any more birds like the snowy owl from last year? Have we seen a flock of birds coming in?
Yeah. Yes, you remember last year was the snowy owl invasion. Yeah. Well, we have new birds invading from the north this year. But this year they are the coniferous cone specialists. So we have an invasion of crossbills, redpolls, grosbeaks, and the like.
Now, when you say it's an invasion, could we actually see that in our home bird feeders?
Absolutely, and it's an interesting story. So it's in some ways, it's the same as the owls, that the food crop that they're relying on, in the owl's case, it was lemmings. In this case, it's the seed crops of the coniferous forest. They don't do well, and so birds, say, red crossbills from the Pacific Northwest, they're such good flyers that it makes sense for them in a bad year to fly all the way to Allegheny, Pennsylvania, the coast of Massachusetts, to Sacramento, California, and the like. It's just amazing that they can travel that easily.
Hmm. David, other than the finches, are there any other bird species that you'll be keeping an eye on?
Well, just one more finch I'd like to mention there. The pine siskin has moved in really big numbers out of the northern forest this winter, and we're seeing them in all of the lower 48 states, which is a pretty impressive eruption year. Another species, though, that not one of the finches that we're keeping an eye on is called the Eurasian collared dove, and the name might be a pretty good clue that it doesn't belong here in North America. It was introduced down in South Florida back in the 1980s, and it's made a really remarkable conquest of North America in the last decade, moving from Florida to Alaska, and is now becoming one of the more common feeder birds that many people see across the country.
Is this a consequence of global warming, where the seasons are changing a little bit, or the climate for these birds?
The dove example is basically an introduction of a novel species to a new place where it finds a welcoming niche. Mm. It does really well in highly modified human landscapes, and it's taking advantage of that all across the country. And it'll be really interesting to see how this Eurasian collared dove interacts with our native dove species, like the mourning dove. It's about 10% bigger than the mourning dove as it continues to move across the country and grow in population size.
Let's go to Midland, Texas. Hi, Slim is on the phone. Welcome to Science Friday.
Yeah, hey, I appreciate you taking my call. I wish I could have got to redbird first. But no, my question is, how come redbirds down here, cardinals, as they say up north, have moved so far, like up into Canada? I mean, they used to just be down south. Now they seem like they're all over the place. Is it climate change?
Good question. Gentlemen?
I'd say the typical answer, I'd be curious to hear David's response too, is that it's a mixture of things. We're certainly getting much more mild winters, but climate change is showing in the wintertime that lots of the center of ranges of birds are moving north. You know, upwards of 40% of the birds are moving north, but there are also a lot of people feeding birds, so they're able to persist in inclement weather further north than they could if that supplemental feeding wasn't there.
Mm-hmm. And the bird count, is it all over the world or just in the Western Hemisphere? Where are the concentrations of folks?
You, by and large, it's in the United States and Canada, but we are expanding ever southwards. Last year was the first time we had a Cuba count. There's three going on right about now, so we can expand a lot more into Central and South America, and that will be very important for us to get a full picture for the full bird ranges in the winter.
We have a tweet coming in from Joe Walker. He says, here in Minnesota, I've noticed what appears to be an increasing number of mallards, which are not migrating. Is this widespread or is it increasing? Do you know what he speaks?
Yeah, a number of the waterfowl, Canada geese are another really great example of that, a species that tends to not be migrating as far as it used to, and you end up with relatively large flocks of resident birds staying in northern states and in southern Canada throughout the wintertime as long as there's some open water available. So yeah, that's definitely another trend that we're seeing, along with species like the cardinals and the tufted titmice and the Carolina wrens moving their ranges to the north.
Jennifer in Chesapeake, Virginia. Hi, welcome to Science Friday.
Hi, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Oh, I just wanted to make a comment. For the last 3 years, I've been hosting bluebirds and bluebird nests in my backyard. And it's just been a great thrill for my son, who's five, and I to watch the whole process. We feed our bluebirds mealworms, live mealworms every morning. And it's just been a great thrill.
Did you try to attract them? Were you shooting for, wrong choice of words, but were you trying to attract the bluebirds?
No, actually, I've just kind of been a bird enthusiast, and I saw them in my neighborhood, so I went to my local Wild Birds Unlimited store no plug on them intended, but I did get a bluebird house, and sure enough, I've had like three or four, I think four nests built, and now I've got like six or seven bluebirds that frequent my backyard.
Well, I'd love to see some in my feeder. I have to. Can you choose the kind of house that will attract certain birds?
Absolutely, you can pick birdhouses that have the right width of hole and size that can encourage groups of birds. So if you got a really big one and you had the right area, you might get a wood duck or whatnot. But let me also just congratulate her for doing that with her kids. It's so important to get outside. And in fact, Ira, I'd like to challenge everyone listening to get out during this holiday break. When we're all home and sitting around, get outside with someone you care about and connect to nature. It's so important, whether it's the CBC or putting up a birdhouse in the spring. Mm. It's just wonderful.
Now, Jennifer, you're still there?
Yeah.
Is she important to the bird count? Is there a place that she should check in or log what she has seen in her backyard someplace?
Yeah, well, absolutely. If anyone's interested in joining the Audubon Christmas Bird Count, they could go to christmasbirdcount.org and look to see if there's still a circle ongoing. But, you know, Audubon and Cornell have year-round projects like eBird that they can also participate any time. And so I would encourage people to sign up for those citizen science projects. In fact, Audubon just yesterday launched a citizen science portal at audubon.org/citizenscience, where you can put in your email and you'll hear about all the free engagements like this that you can sign up for with your family.
Good luck, Jennifer.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling. 1-800-989-8255. Cindy in Idaho Falls, Idaho. Hi, Cindy.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I have three Eastern Blue Jays that have been visiting my feeder ever since fall. And I was wondering, I guess there's been blue jay sightings here in the last couple of years, but I was wondering either from the Cornell or the Audubon expert what's going on with that number of population in the West and certainly around here.
Yeah, we are actually seeing a bit of a range expansion of blue jays into the Pacific Northwest. We have a number of sites now in as far west as Washington State where blue jays are showing up. So bird ranges are not static. They change all the time, and that's why it's important to have these large-scale monitoring programs and engaging the public to help us better understand what's going on with bird populations. So projects like the Christmas Bird Count, Project Feeder Watch, eBird are excellent ways for us to better understand the natural world.
Thanks,
and anybody can contribute.
Thanks for calling.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. 1-800-989-8255. Tim in Stillwater, Oklahoma. Hi, Tim.
Hey, how you doing? Thanks for talking about the Christmas Bird Count on Science Friday.
You're welcome.
I've got a comment. You were talking about Eurasian collared doves a few minutes ago, and your guests might appreciate this. While we were owling last week, we found Eurasian collared dove remains beneath the roost of Great Horned Owl.
Wow.
Yes. Yes.
Now, what does that mean to the layperson? To me, you guys are talking bird geek talk, if I might put it that way. What is significant about that, Tim?
Well, the thing that was interesting to me was, you know, Eurasian collared dove is an exotic species that's really spreading rapidly across the country. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty cool to see that our great horned owls are, you know, being predators on those birds, which was new to me, new information for me.
Are you a longtime birder?
Yes, I am.
Are you part of the Christmas bird count?
Sure, I lead people out every year.
All right. Thanks for calling.
I have about eight people with me getting up at 4 in the morning to go owling.
Out there in Stillwater?
Out here in Stillwater.
Wow.
Yep. Yeah.
Got the long johns on. Thanks for calling, Tim.
All right, thank you.
Good luck, and have a happy holiday. That's significant to you guys, Gary and David?
I think it's really interesting. I'd be curious to know how he identified it definitively. That would have been a good one to follow-up I should have asked.
Yeah, well, he's part of the bird count. Maybe he'll report
yeah,
it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's go to Mark in Kansas City, Kansas. Hi, Mark.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Hi there.
Show was advertised on the Missouri and Kansas listservs today, so hopefully you got a lot of birders listening today. I typically participate in 4 to 5 Christmas counts in the Kansas area, and birders get excited here when a count circle gets 100+, and or they add a new species to the count. And in one day last weekend, there were 3 circles in Kansas that had over 100 species, so that we're all excited.
Wow.
We're also
it's pretty exciting when species show up in unexpected places, too.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We also had an early eruption of red-breasted nuthatches in the state.
Wow.
Yeah, red-breasted nuthatches came south out of the boreal forest in late August this year, which was pretty early. So the food availability up in the northern forest must be pretty poor this year.
Mm-hmm. All right, 1-800-989-8255. Why are we seeing so many birds coming south? You know, from those areas in the Arctic. That was a tweet that just came in.
So the answer to that is, as I was alluding to a little bit earlier, that these seed-eating birds tend to be specialized on one or a few kinds of pine cones, and so when that tree is having a bad year, they'll come south. And what's interesting is it happens every 3 to 6 years for each species, that sometimes they'll just naturally co-occur. So I think it was in 97, 98, we had lots of species doing it. And this year, the red crossbills are particularly numerous. The idea is it's the so-called type 3 that is coming out of the Pacific Northwest, focused on western hemlocks.
Hmm. Gary, what's one of the most interesting birds you've seen during the Christmas bird count?
Just a year or two ago, when I was out with my 2.5-year-old daughter, which was really fun by itself, we found a sage thrasher in close to Sacramento, California, where it wasn't supposed to be. And I think the homeowners that owned the ornamentals near where it was were surprised to see the dozens of birders that came to get that bird on their county list.
Wow. So it was just standing there in the garage or the driveway or something?
It was just sitting there in the driveway, just hanging out. So it wasn't supposed to be there.
What do you do when you see that? Do you pull out the book and make sure that it's right? Do you go, wow, you jump up and down? What happens when you see something like
that? Yeah, first you jump up and down, and then you double check.
You take a photo.
then you document it if you can, and then you get confirmation. You want other people to come and see it and share in the fun.
Hmm. Let's go to Dan in Tupersburg, Pennsylvania. Hi, Dan.
Hey, thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
Similar to your first caller, I've been raising bluebirds actually for I've been hosting bluebirds for about 17 years on my back deck. Every single year, they will have a brood in one box, and then when they're done, they'll move over to the next box or have another brood. If anything happens to that second brood, if it's early enough, they'll actually have a third brood, and I believe it's all the same couple. But my question is, this time of year, I see 7, 8, sometimes more, typically 5 or 6, though, but sometimes 7, 8, bluebirds coming and checking out the houses for the springtime. And I'm wondering, do you think that they would be the same birds, or would they be the children or the offspring of those birds every single year? And how long do they live?
This is Science Friday from NPR. Well, what about the answer to that? Do they check out new real estate? The same birds?
Bluebirds do tend to form a small winter foraging flock, so they'll move around in groups of 5 to 10 birds, and they do tend to be fairly resident as long as there are enough resources there in the form of fruit on fruiting shrubs. They can stay even in cold places all winter long, and they'll continue to check out the boxes and sometimes even roost in the boxes at night.
I swore last year when we lost the leaves, not this year but last year, that I saw this. The tree must have been 200 feet high, but at the top looked like, I would only describe it as a turkey vulture. Because it was this giant vulture-looking like bird, in Connecticut where I live, I couldn't believe it could be it. Could that have been it? Because I couldn't think of anything else that could have been. Gentlemen?
Yeah, turkey vultures are certainly found in Connecticut, probably year-round. A few hardy turkey vultures could overwinter in the state of Connecticut. And there's another vulture called the black vulture, which you're just about at the northern extent of the range for that species, but that's another possibility.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of turkeys, let me go to this call quickly. Ed in Tuttenham Valley, New York. Hi, Ed.
Hi. You're talking about turkey vultures. I'm talking about turkeys.
Well, go ahead.
Real turkeys.
Go ahead, talk about them.
In October, I have, almost inevitably, anywhere from 12 to 25 turkeys running around my yard. And they sleep in the trees in the back. The trees are about 30, 40 feet up, okay? Which is kind of fascinating. They sleep, and in the morning, when the sun comes up, they face the sunrise, and if it's a cloudy day, they come down earlier. If it's sunny, if it's going to be a good sunrise, they stay a little long in the trees. They think it's the most fascinating thing I've ever seen.
Wow. A flock of turkeys, yeah.
It often surprises people that turkeys can fly, the wild turkeys. And the other interesting point about that that the listeners probably don't know is because turkeys have become much more common, just like the caller was relaying, and have been introduced in places like California where, you know, they can be considered a nuisance, they're actually a conservation success story. In the 1930s, they were in danger of going extinct, and groups like Audubon, mm-hmm. Christmas Bird Count, and agencies banded together, and you know that's a modern-day success story.
All right, we're going to talk almost our national bird. We're going to, if it were up to Ben Franklin, we're going to come back and talk more, lots more about the Christmas bird count with Gary Langham and David Bonter. 1-800-989-8255. Call in about anything you want to know about birds. Bird Schmooze this hour on Science Friday. This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. We're talking this hour about the Christmas bird count and winter birding tips with my guest, Gary Langham, chief scientist at the National Audubon Society, David Bonter, an ornithologist at Cornell University, our number 1-800-989-8255. David, tell us about the project you have going, the Feed Watch, Feeder Watch, Project Feeder Watch. What is that about?
Yeah, Project Feeder Watch is another one of these large-scale citizen science programs that engages the public to help us better understand what's going on with the natural world. And we're in our 26th season of Feeder Watch, and it engages people to watch what's going on at their own backyard bird feeders, follow a pretty simple protocol for counting the birds that are coming to their feeders and sending that information to us. And it runs from November to April each winter. And we have about 18,000 folks all across the U.S. and Canada helping us to really grasp what's going on with bird populations out there. And it's another one of those programs that, like the Christmas Bird Count, that anybody can get involved with. So I encourage folks to go to feederwatch.org and learn more about that program.
Maybe that will help Susanna in Westfield, New Jersey. Hi, Susanna. Welcome to Science Friday.
Hi there. My son is 11 years old, and he is a very enthusiastic birder. We actually plan family trips so that he gets some birding in wherever we go in the country or in the world. And he has yet to meet a single child who's into birding the way he is. He wants to go to Cornell to study ornithology when he goes to college.
Great.
And I'm wondering, how can we get him to find other kids who love birds as much as he does?
Yeah, that's a challenge these days. A lot of the birding clubs out there tend to be more older folks, not a whole lot of kids hanging out in the bird clubs. But we do have a program called the Young Birders Event at Cornell University at the Cornell Lab of Ornithology each year, where we bring in some of these really keen young birders from across the country to visit the lab and learn about all the work that we do, all the research we do there at the Cornell Lab of Ornithology, and many of those students end up applying to and coming to Cornell and getting involved in research right out of high school.
That's fantastic. When does that take place, and how can I find out about it? Because my father-in-law went to Cornell, so it would be easy to persuade the family to make a big trip.
I encourage you to go to the lab's website at cornell.birds.edu, and you'll find information on the Young Birders event there.
Susanna, have you tried looking around the internet for interest for your son, maybe online if you can't
find
any?
I did find online a website for something like a Young Birders Club or something like that, and it seemed to be sort of out of date. It had information from several months ago. Seemed to possibly have an event sometime January, but they hadn't set a date. So it didn't seem to be a particularly active organization, and I have not found anything else in our area.
Well, there's a group called Meetups. I think Yahoo runs it. And you can put your own group together, anything you'd like to do at all, and create your own Meetups. You might try, maybe he can create his own group of Meetup, find people. I don't know. I'm just thinking out loud.
The other thing, not a bad idea,
but I guess as a parent I would have to manage that, because I don't want it to be attracting the wrong people.
I'd also encourage you to look at your local Audubon chapter if you haven't already. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they have very active youth groups, sometimes not, but it's worth checking. There's 467 chapters around the U.S.
Okay, we'll do that.
Thanks a lot, and have a happy holiday.
Thanks, bye-bye.
Mark Letney writes, just moved from North Carolina to Connecticut. What should I put out to feed birds during winter months in New Haven? Let me expand that to say, does it matter what kind of food you put out for the birds to what you will attract?
Absolutely. The best all-around attractant for birds in here in North America is black oil sunflower seed. That will attract the widest diversity of species to your backyard, pretty much no matter where you are. A lot of folks also put out fine cracked corn or white millet, and some of the smaller seeds that sparrows and juncos mm-hmm. and doves really prefer. But if you only have one seed to offer, I would definitely say black oil sunflower is the way to go.
All right, let's go to Andy in Washington, Iowa. Andy.
Hi, guys. Yes. Great topic today.
Thank you. Go
ahead. Hey, I just wanted to report on, we have Eurasian collared doves in Washington, Iowa, so you can put a little thumbtack on your map. But more importantly, I have a question about ivory-billed woodpeckers. Is anyone ever going to put one of those on their Christmas list? What's the latest news on those? And I'll hang out and listen to the answer. Thank you.
Thank you. You're welcome. Yeah, anybody spotted one yet?
Well, there hasn't been much news on that front, unfortunately, in several years now. The folks at the Cornell Lab of Ornithology undertook an exhaustive search with a bunch of partners over the last 5 or 6 years of all of the old haunts of the ivory bill, and unfortunately, no solid evidence has turned up in the last few years. But we still hold out a little bit of hope. It really is a sad story, a species that we knew was going extinct and nobody did anything about it. And I'd like to think that these days we would act very differently than we did in the past.
Hmm. Let's go to RJ in Salinas, California. Hi, RJ.
Hey, thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to comment. I've been doing CBC since my early teens, so over 25 years now. And one of the real joys of doing Christmas bird counts is when you do the same area over and over again, the same small piece of territory, you get to know that territory extremely well. And it's almost like visiting a neighborhood where you grew up in and seeing those changes that happen in it. But you also get to know, you know, that little patch of trees is perfect for red-breasted nuthatches, and that little area is where you're going to get your common yellow throats. And you really get to... it's a familiarity that is just fantastic. And one of my favorite parts about doing CBCs is going to these areas year after year after year. And I'm actually really fortunate that I get to do, I think, you know, a little plug, two of the most beautiful CBCs in the area. I get to do the Big Sur Christmas Bird Count and the Pinnacles Christmas Bird Counts, both of which have condors and wow. golden eagles and some amazing wildlife and beautiful scenery.
Sounds like a lot of fun.
Yes, thank you.
It's
for
an
your...
amazing area. But that, I just want to kind of throw yeah. that out there about that being one yeah. of the joys of the CBC is doing those same areas year after year after year.
Interesting, yeah.
A thing most people don't really think about.
Thank you for your dedication. It's folks like you that really make the Christmas bird count work, and having that local knowledge is so critical. And the other thing I just wanted to point out is that, you know, as the caller knows, it's more than just about bird watching, and which is part of the fun, right? See how many birds you can see, and someone had mentioned the list earlier. But it's about getting a handle on the trends of birds across the country in winter, so that we know, so we can avoid the next ivory-billed woodpecker well before it gets to the point of trying to find the last bird.
How did it go extinct? What happened? What's the story on that?
David, do you want to comment on that?
Well, basically, it was habitat loss and combined with hunting. Back in the 19-teens, the 1920s, when the species was dwindling, it was still yeah. quite popular then to yeah. have a specimen of a rare bird in your collection. So the last few individuals were hunted out on purpose. But it was a species that really depended upon massive, massive trees in bottomland forests, and most of those trees were cut down as development marched across the country.
Gentlemen, I want to thank you for taking time to be with us today.
And thank you, Ira.
Happy holidays to you.
My pleasure.
Gary Langham, Chief Scientist at National Audubon Society in Washington. David Bonter, Ornithologist at Cornell Lab of Ornithology at Cornell in Ithaca. Have a good weekend. We'll have you back next year.
All right. See you then.
Happy birding.